ਹੁੰਦਾ ਬਿਹਾਰੀ ਗੋਪੀ ਚੰਨ ਪਾਵਾ ਕੀ ਬਲਹਾਰੀ ਗੋਪੀ ਚੰਨ ਪਾਵਾ ਕੀ ਬਲਹਾਰੀ ਯਸ਼ੋਰ ਨੰਦਨ ਬ੍ਰਜ ਜਨ ਰੰਜਨ ਯਸ਼ੋਰ ਨੰਦਨ ਬ੍ਰਜ ਜਨ ਰੰਜਨ ਯਮੁਨਾ ਤੀਰਾ ਬਨਚਾਰੀ ਯਮੁਨਾ ਤੀਰਾ ਬਨਚਾਰੀ ਰਾਧਾ ਮਾਧਵ ਸੁੰਜਾ ਬਿਹਾਰੀ ਗੋਪੀ ਚੰਨ ਪਾਵਾ ਕੀ ਬਲਹਾਰੀ ਯਸ਼ੋਰ ਨੰਦਨ ਬ੍ਰਜ ਜਨ ਰੰਜਨ ਯਮੁਨਾ ਤੀਰਾ ਬਨਚਾਰੀ ਯਮੁਨਾ ਤੀਰਾ ਬਨਚਾਰੀ ਜਯਾ ਰਾਧਾ ਮਾਧਵ ਸੁੰਜਾ ਬਿਹਾਰੀ ਜਯਾ ਰਾਧਾ ਮਾਧਵ ਸੁੰਜਾ ਬਿਹਾਰੀ ਗੋਰ ਪ੍ਰੇਮਾਨੰਦੀ
Krishna. Nice to be here. Thank you for staying inside even while prasadam is being served. It is a remarkable testament to your devotion. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So many years ago, when I had the privilege of distributing books to professors with Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, Sesha Prabhu, and other wonderful devotees, we would sometimes meet scholars who were in religious studies and specializing in Hinduism. And they would look at our Srimad Bhagavatam and say, "We only want the Vedas. We only study the Vedas. We don't take these later corollary literatures such as Srimad Bhagavatam." And what to speak of Chaitanya Charitamrita, even Bhagavad Gita. So these were not practitioners. They were just kind of scholars, arm-length theoretical scholars. So there is a distinction between the Vedas and the supplementary literatures, which are so crucial to the practice of bhakti. So I'd like to talk this afternoon a little about this relationship between the Vedic literatures and bhakti. So there's many, many verses on this subject in the Bhagavad Gita, and I've chosen this one from chapter 2, verse 46. If you would please chant along.
Yavanartha udapane sarvata samputodake
Savan Sarveshu Vedeshu. Brahmanasya Vijanataha. Yavan Artha Udapane. Sarvatak Samputodake. Tavan Sarveshu Vedeshu. Dhamanasya Vijanataha. Please chant. Yavanartha Udapane. Sarvata Samputodake. Sarvesu Vedesu. Dhammanasya Vijanataha. Yavanartha Udapane. Sarvata Samputodake. Savan Sarveshu Vedeshu. Brahmanasya Vijanataha. Yavanartha Udapane. Sarvata Samputodake. Savan Sarveshu Vedeshu. Brahmanasya Vijanataha. Yavanartha Udapane. Sarvata Samputodake. Savan Sarveshu Vedeshu. Brahmanasya Vijanataha. Thank you. Okay. Synonyms. Yavan. All that. Artha. Is meant. Udapane. In a well of water. Sarvataha. In all respects. Samputodake. In a great reservoir of water. Savan. Similarly. Sarveshu. In all. Vedeshu. Vedic literatures. Pamanasya. Of the man who knows the supreme Paman. Vijanataha. Is in complete knowledge. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. All purposes served by a small well can at once be served by a great reservoir of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served to one who knows the purpose behind them. Please repeat. All purposes served by a small well can at once be served by a great reservoir of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served to one who knows the purpose behind them. Purport. The rituals and sacrifices mentioned in the Karmakanda division of the Vedic literatures are meant to encourage gradual development of self-realization. And the purpose of self-realization is clearly stated in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The purpose of studying the Vedas is to know Lord Krishna, the primeval cause of everything. So self-realization means understanding Krishna and one's eternal relationship with him. The relationship of the living entities with Krishna is also mentioned in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verse 7. The living entities are parts and parcels of Krishna. Therefore, revival of Krishna consciousness by the individual living entity is the highest perfectional stage of Vedic knowledge. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 33rd chapter, verse 7, as follows. Aho bhattasva pachota gariyan yaj jiva gre bhakate namatu vyam te pustapas te juhuvu shashnur arya brahma nuchur nama grinanti yate. O my Lord, A person who is chanting your holy name, although born of a low family like that of a chandala or dog eater, is situated on the highest platform of self-realization. Such a person must have performed all kinds of penances and sacrifices according to Vedic rituals and studied the Vedic literatures many, many times after taking bath in the holy places of pilgrimage. Such a person is considered to be the best of the Aryan family. So one must be intelligent enough to understand the purpose of the Vedas without being attached to the rituals only, and must not desire to be elevated to the heavenly kingdoms for a better quality of sense gratification. It is not possible for the common man in this age to follow all the rules and regulations of Vedic rituals, nor is it possible to study all the Vedanta and Upanishads thoroughly. It requires much time, energy, knowledge, and resources to execute the purpose of the Vedas. This is hardly possible in this age. The best purpose of Vedic culture is served, however, by chanting the holy name of the Lord, as recommended by Lord Chaitanya, the deliverer of all fallen souls. When Lord Chaitanya was asked by a great Vedic scholar, Prakashananda Saraswati, why he, the Lord, was chanting the holy name of the Lord like a sentimentalist instead of studying Vedanta philosophy, the Lord replied that his spiritual master had found him to be a great fool and thus asked him to chant the holy name of Lord Krishna. He did so and became ecstatic like a madman. In the age of Kali, most of the population is foolish and not adequately educated to understand Vedanta philosophy. The best purpose of Vedanta philosophy is served by inoffensively chanting the holy names of the Lord. Vedanta is the last word in Vedic wisdom, and the author and knower of the Vedanta philosophy is Lord Krishna. And the highest Vedantist is the great soul who takes pleasure in chanting the holy name of the Lord. That is the ultimate purpose of all Vedic mysticism. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. When we meet Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, he is perplexed and depressed. And so Krishna gives him a sequence of counseling topics. First he says what? What is the first thing Krishna says to Arjuna in response to his reluctance to fight? You're not this body, right? He talks about you're not this body in a number of verses. How Krishna may participate, Arjuna may participate in the war, but he won't really be able to kill the enemies because the soul and the body are different. Then he goes on to talk about his duty as a Kshatriya. And for another 10 or 12 verses, he talks about how the Kshatriya is very happy to get an opportunity to fight. And because Arjuna has been recognized as a great warrior or Kshatriya, if he now backs out of the battle, everyone who previously appreciated him will make fun of him. So he is appealing to his pride. And finally, or next, he then talks about the subject of Vedic practices. So this is the section from which this verse is taken. Now, the Vedic literatures predate the supplementary Vedic literatures. They're known respectively as the Shruti and the Smriti. So Shruti are the ancient Vedic literatures. Shruti means that which has been heard. These are texts that were previously passed down by oral reception. There was no need to write them because people's memories were so sharp that having heard them once, they would remember them for a lifetime. But with the onset of the age of Kali, Vyasadeva recognized they would need to be written. So he transcribed them all in a written form so they could be maintained accurately. Veda means knowledge. So in this Veda, in the Veda, all human knowledge was summarized. Every aspect of life. Not only the philosophical and theological, but the practical. Health, Ayurveda, and construction, and all, agriculture, all sorts of things, all topics. So Vyasa then saw that the coming age of darkness was so pernicious that he thought, I cannot expect people to understand this book. So he divided it into four sections and left each of the four sections in charge of one person, one esteemed sage, respectively. So even today in India, you will meet people with this last name, the surname Ekveda, Chaturvedi, Dvivedi, Trivedi. Their families traditionally are known for remembering one, two, three, or four of the Vedas. So this was the original compilation of Vedic knowledge to which Krishna is referring in these verses. Now, the Vedas teach one the value of piety, self-control, sacrifice to others. So they are meant for bringing people up from a low point of wanton sense enjoyment to a life of self-control and progressive advancement. They emphasize the various ways to fulfill various desires through pious acts. If you want to have money, then you worship this god in this way. If you want to have a nice family, you worship this deity. And in this way, there's a general instruction of submission to a higher authority. The Vedas are full of this sort of teaching. So in Arjuna's case, because he's reluctant to fight, he's thinking about the piety of the Vedas. That it would be better for me to be a pious person and not engage in this terrible warfare. Now, he was not taking into consideration the fact that the other side had been violently and illegally usurping the throne. He was just thinking, for myself, I'd rather be pious. And it will be much better if I am detached from this kingdom and don't take part in the war. So Krishna then, in these several very strong verses, refutes his idea. He says, men of small knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruit of activities for elevation, resulting in good birth, power, and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say there's nothing more than this. In the minds of those who are too much attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, and who are bewildered by such things, the resolution for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. The Vedas deal mainly with the subject of the three modes of material nature, O Arjuna. Become transcendental to these three modes. Be free from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety, and be established in the self. And then it brings us then to this verse. If you know the purpose of the Vedas, it's just like having a lake. Everything you could do from a well, you can do from a lake. So you may take the individual topics of the Vedas one by one. But if you have the vast reservoir of water, all of those purposes are fulfilled, whatever one's ambitions may be. So then the question, of course, becomes, what is the purpose of the Vedas? What is the purpose of the Vedas, which fulfills all of its descriptions, or all of its benefits? This is also discussed in the Gita. Now, before we get to more of these verses, you remember Srila Vyasadeva, the author of the Vedas, after writing them all and dividing them all, and even writing a commentary to explain them called Vedanta Sutra, he was still feeling dissatisfied. He was depressed. I love this about the Srimad Bhagavatam. The author starts off by explaining he was depressed. and then he goes on to explain how his guru mystically appeared and pinpointed the cause of his depression and corrected it. And he said, the problem is you've written all of this Vedic knowledge, but you haven't described Lord Krishna. So Vyasa then wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the essential fruit of all the Vedic literature, which explains the purpose of the Vedic literature. So the Bhagavad Gita is the introduction to spiritual life. In the Vedic summary, known as Vedanta Sutra, the first sentence is Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now that you've become a human being, your purpose in life is self-realization. So the Vedic literatures give all of these methods for gradual progression, but the essential point is self-realization, understanding who you are, and entering into that existence as a servant of Krishna. This is the purpose of the Vedas. Krishna describes this many places in the Gita, particularly in chapter 15. He begins this chapter by talking about a banyan tree. He says, imagine a huge banyan tree. And this tree is, if you've ever seen a banyan, you know, it has this ability to drop roots from its branches. So it grows up, spreads out its branches, and then drops roots. And then the roots enter the soil, and they become trunks, and they put out yet more branches. And this way, a single banyan tree can fill acres of land. It's a huge conglomeration of trunks and branches and roots and leaves. And it's impossible to tell where it started. Almost impossible to tell where it started. So Krishna describes to Arjuna that this world is like this banyan tree. You can't really tell where it begins. And all of its leaves and branches are just meant to distract you from the real purpose of life. In introducing this analogy, he then says, one who knows the purpose of the Vedas will know how to handle this tree. And how does one handle this tree? He says one has to cut it down with the weapon of detachment. So the purpose of the Vedic literature is ultimately to bring us to the stage where we love God and we become detached from all the things that the Vedas promised us. You know how they have these buy one, get one free sales or Black Friday sales, you know, just to get people to come in the store, some special benefit. So the Vedic literatures are like that. Okay, you want to enjoy this world? Here's how you can do it, through piety, through sacrifice, through charity. If you really want to become opulent and enjoy things in this world. But that's only the introductory offer to get us started on the track. Now, I don't want to criticize our Christian friends, because anybody who's interested in God in this day and age is a rare and wonderful person. But Achyutananda Prabhu once was with Srila Prabhupada in Calcutta, and there was a Kali worship going on. This Kali worship is a horrible sacrifice of goats and things that are abhorrent to Vaishnavas. But it's very popular among the general people because, again, they get some pious benefit from it. So Achyutananda asked Srila Prabhupada, which is better, is it Christianity or this Kali worship? And he said, Prabhupada thought about it for a minute, and then he said this Kali worship is better because at least it's part of something systematic. It is meant to drive people or bring people up gradually. So in our experience with Krishna consciousness, we are exposed to the Vedic literatures, and we're also exposed to this love of God, or bhakti. So, they have similarities. Again, the Vedas are meant to elevate people, bhakti is meant to elevate people. Vedic literatures prescribe self-sacrifice and austerity. Bhakti also is nourished by such things. But the difference is that bhakti is recommended throughout Bhagavad Gita. And every Hindu accepts Bhagavad Gita, right? This is one, it said there are 800 million Hindus and 800 million varieties of Hinduism. But the one universal thing, right, that every Hindu will accept is that the Bhagavad Gita is a sacred text. But in the Gita, repeatedly Krishna criticizes the idea of following just the Vedas. In this section, in the ninth chapter, I believe, Veda Bhagavata, Partha, that those who are attached to the flower, to the Vedic literatures, they can rise up, but then again they come back down. If they are trying to elevate themselves materially through piety, they may succeed for a while, but they'll come down. So as mentioned in the purport also, not only in Arjuna's time, but in the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, 500 years ago. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a great scholar in his youth. He was very learned in the Vedas. He could defeat anybody. He would defeat them, and then he would take their argument and defeat them again. So then he met his spiritual master, Ishvara Puri, who said, "You're too foolish to study the Vedas, just chant Hare Krishna." So by chanting, by going up to bhakti, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became like a madman. Of course, he's Krishna himself, but he's showing us this transformation for our benefit. So, similarly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's predecessor guru, Manavendra Puri, wrote beautiful prayers in which he said, "I'm sorry, I don't have time. My dear daily bath or ritualistic bath, I don't have time for you anymore. I'm sorry." All of the Vedic rituals, he said, with deep humility, "I'm very sorry, I just don't have time anymore. I only have time to serve Govinda, and I think that will be enough for me." And then he said, "Since I've been trying to serve Govinda, all the Vedic scholars tell me that I am misled. And the learned philosophers say that I'm puffed up. And all my friends and family think I'm just nuts. But still, I determined to serve the lotus feet of Govinda, even though I'm unable to do it." So there are many examples of how Vedic scholarship is put into a subordinate position to bhakti. Similarly, our own dear Srila Prabhupada, coming to the Western countries, just the very act of coming was contrary to Vedic prescription, right? A sannyasi, a renunciate, is not supposed to leave the holy place. Not supposed to go beyond the borders of Bharat, the holy land of India. But Srila Prabhupada immediately, his first opportunity was on a boat heading west, with no association. And then when he came to the west, he found people very enamored by materialism. And so he did not attempt to introduce any Vedic rules and regulations. He just tried to get people to chant Hare Krishna. He just tried to get people to practice bhakti, because he knew if they could take up bhakti, everything else would gradually come. The great teacher Rupa Goswami said, "Yena tena prakarena mana Krishna naveshaya." Somehow or other, think about Krishna, the rules and regulations can come later. In fact, when he first initiated his first group of disciples, 10 or 12 disciples, Srila Prabhupada gave them their spiritual names, showed them how to chant. And the next day, one of the initiates asked, "Srila Prabhupada, now that we're initiated, are there any rules we should follow?" And Srila Prabhupada said, "I'm very glad you're asking that question." So everything was based on bhakti. Just somehow or other, chant and think about Krishna, and then the rules and regulations can come later. So in our Judeo-Christian environment here in the West, there are echoes of these things, in that religion is mixed, or piety is mixed with the idea of prosperity. That if you are sufficiently religious, then God will reciprocate by giving you opulence. This is called the prosperity gospel. And for the last 70 or 80 years, it has become pretty much the dominant strain of evangelical Christianity in the West. That if you are religious, God will protect you. God will save you. God will take care of you. God will provide for you. And so religion becomes a sort of a business exchange. This is very similar to the motivation of people who follow the Vedas. I will be pious so that I can enjoy this world. You see? Now, Srila Prabhupada was once asked, "What is the most important verse among the 18,000 verses in Srimad Bhagavatam?" A scholar of Srimad Bhagavatam asked him this question. So Srila Prabhupada answered with a verse which to many of us was rather obscure. First canto, second chapter, verse 9. Dharmasya hyapavargasya narta utaya upakalpate. Nartasya dharmakantasya kamo labhaya hi smrita. And this means that in the course of spiritual growth, one should never pursue economic development. Spirituality and economic development are two different things. But if in the course of spiritual growth one happens to get economic development, that's all right, but it should never be used for sense enjoyment. So this he considered so important. Many people look at Krishna conscious people and feel like, oh, these are artificially renounced people who are just trying to give up this world, otherworldly, they're escapists. You know, this is the farthest thing from the truth. We're ready to deal with anything. Arjuna was ready to deal with the battle of Kurukshetra. So no, we'll deal with whatever our prescribed duties are. It's just that our purpose in doing them is for Krishna. And throughout the Gita, Krishna explains, you don't have to try to be detached as a separate effort. If you just try to please me, if you just practice bhakti, detachment will come. And knowledge will come. And everything you may need will come. Desham nityabhiyukhanam yogokshemam vahamyaham. He promises not fantastic wealth or opulence, but whatever you need for your bhakti, I will provide that. So, in summary, Krishna has given us the Vedas. They emanate from Krishna. They are divine. They are transcendental. But they deal mainly with lower class pursuits for human beings. The essence of the Vedas, however, is to love Krishna. That is explained more thoroughly in the Srimad Bhagavatam and the supplementary literatures, which were written later to make the Vedas relevant to us in this day and age. Again, foremost of these books is Bhagavad Gita. And in the Gita, in chapter 8, Krishna says, at the end of this chapter, Vedeshu Yageshu Tapishu Chaiva, that if you engage in bhakti, everything you could gain by studying the Vedas or performing austerities or giving charity or practicing yoga, everything that you can possibly gain from any other pursuit for self-betterment is automatically achieved. This is the great blessing of bhakti. And this is why if one simply has bhakti, then everything is accomplished. One last short point. As practitioners of Krishna consciousness, we're often challenged with this issue. Are we here to develop bhakti or are we here to spread Vedic culture? Prabhupada did say many times that one of the purposes of this movement is to spread Vedic culture throughout the world. So how much Vedic culture and how much bhakti? If you have bhakti, you can have Vedic culture too, but if you have only Vedic culture, it doesn't mean you have bhakti. So the answer to the question, how much Vedic culture do we need, is as much as an individual may want, or not want. As long as one has bhakti, this is what is important. All right, I'll stop there. Thank you for your kind attention. Any comments or questions? Should I call, is this your son? Should I call him the son or the father first?
Son.
Son.
Hare Krishna. So I had a question. So, if we are in this age of Kali, if we are supposed to like pursue bhakti and get Lord Krishna, so then why did Krishna send Sri Ved Vyas to write down those Vedas if there is no use of it, like any special purpose of it?
Yes, there is a use of the Vedas. And the value of the Vedas is to gradually bring one up to the point where they can approach Krishna in devotion. But it's a very gradual step. There's value in that. Just like in a skyscraper, there's an elevator that goes up to the 100th floor, but there's also a fire emergency set of steps, right? So one can get to the top by taking all the steps, or one can get to the top by taking the elevator. So bhakti is compared to the elevator, and the Vedic literatures are the steps. So if for any reason one doesn't want to practice bhakti, the Vedic literature is there. So it has a value. But bahunam janmanam ante, after many, many births of studying the Vedas, one will finally come to bhakti. So by the grace of Srila Prabhupada and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can get right to the point. And because, as you say, it's the age of Kali, we may not have time to take the stairs, right? Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu, for the nice class. Athato brahma jikyasa. Does it mean that we should pursue for the self-realization or the God-realization or the Krishna-realization?
The two are simultaneous.
Yes. But what does it mean?
Brahma jigyasa, Brahma jigyasa. Spirituality. Brahma jigyasa, to inquire into Brahman, into what is spirituality. And spirituality means understanding ourself and understanding God, both. You know, these are the topics of Bhagavad Gita include who is God, what is the self, and what is the relationship between the two. So we need to have all three aspects, actually, to truly understand spirituality. Just like in the morning, early in the morning, pre-dawn, it's very dark outside, you may not be able to see even your hand in front of your face. But when the sun rises, even just a little, then we can see our hand and ourselves and everything. So similarly, when the Son of Krishna arises in our lives, then the self also becomes understandable.
So in the Krishna consciousness, we should pursue bhakti and try to understand Krishna, or try to understand ourself first.
We should try to please Krishna. Just try to please Krishna. That's understanding our relationship. Sambandha means theoretical understanding. Okay? We get an idea who we are, who God is. And then abhideya means to put it into practice. So that we can do by chanting. Chanting immediately puts us in a position of pleasing Krishna, because Krishna is very pleased to hear the sound of his name, and he's not ashamed to admit it. Okay. Yes.
While out distributing Prabhupada's books in this day and time that we're living in, people are asking the question, if there is a God, why is he allowing COVID, pandemics, so many deaths? What does it mean if it is a God? What does it mean? Why is he allowing this? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are becoming discouraged, mm-hmm. and losing faith in the God. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you were a book distributor, how would you approach this question? How would you answer their questions?
Sometimes the loving parents, for the betterment of the child, will give some discipline. Now, the child doesn't like the discipline, but in the long run, it makes the child a better person. So he is the supreme controller. COVID is happening. Everything is happening by his decision and his power. He can stop it. He can start it. So clearly, he has some reason. Now, the child may not have the maturity to understand why the parent is disciplining. But the child has these two options to think, oh, my parents are so mean. They don't love me. Or, okay, my parent must have a good reason for this. I may not know it, but I love my parent, I know my parent loves me. I trust them. So the basic question that's being asked is, do we trust God or not? We trust God when he's nice, but we don't trust him when he's not? See? Then we also have to be a little introspective. What is our relationship? What are we bringing to the table? You give me what I want, I'll believe in you. You give me what I don't want, I'll forget it. What's our attitude? This is a little deep, but if people are actually asking that sincerely, and from a position of having once believed in God and having their faith tested by COVID, you can try to explain this. I mean, the distributing books is it's a tough way to get into very deep conversations. But having a concise answer can help, and then say, here, and you can read more about it in this book. Yes?
I was just thinking about culture, because I was thinking about the other day, I was listening to class, and he was talking about culture, how culture represents the religiousness of the population, you know, or what it is that they're worshiping. Like we see in the West, the culture kind of represents consumerism and you know, Christmas is supposed to be a religious holiday, but it's all about buying, 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 spending. You know, so in one sense, the Vedic culture, it popped up the understanding of spiritual life. You know, the way they dress, the way they eat, the way, you know, all the different aspects of the culture. So in some ways, it is very important, even though, you know, in the West it's hard to understand because we're brought up in such a culture that's so opposed. But it is such an important asset. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, we are spreading the Vedic culture, mm-hmm. even though it's hard in this day and age.
Yes, it's not the Vedic culture. I very much appreciate your point. Vedic culture is valuable, it's elevated, it's superior, it's the highest culture for human beings. It's just that it's not our goal. It's a byproduct. As we progress in our spirituality, the practices of the Vedic culture become very common sense and very relishable, and they enhance our spirituality. But they're not spirituality in and of itself. This is the point. There's a story about a Russian village where the status symbol was a fur coat. The wealthy had fur coats, everyone else wore lesser coats. So this one peasant was just determined he was going to get a fur coat somehow or other. And he scrimped and saved and he sold everything. And finally, he got enough money to get a fur coat. And then he walked out in the village square with his new fur coat and everybody started laughing. And he said, "Why are they laughing at me?" And then he realized they could see that underneath he was naked. He sold everything else, all he had was a fur coat. So if we just make a show of Vedic culture, but we don't have the spirituality to back it up, then that has no meaning in and of itself.
So those are necessities.
Yes, but bhakti is the basis. Yeah. If our Vedic culture is based on bhakti, then it has substance. But otherwise, it's just a show. Thank you.
From the Gaudiya Vaishnava perspective, how would you define Vedic? Because according to other darshans, Vedic means only the Vedas, the Rig Veda, Atharva Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda. And quite often we hear that word even amongst the circle within Islam, or Vaishnava himself, they'll say, it's Vedic this and it's Vedic that. But I would like to know, you know, what your idea, what your thought on, if we use the word Vedic, what does it mean from our perspective?
From the Gaudiya Vaishnava perspective?
Yes.
Yeah. The Vedas to the Gaudiya Vaishnava, they are cultural accoutrements to bhakti. They are ornaments that help enhance our bhakti. But again, without the bhakti, they're a secondary consideration. So, Srila Prabhupada once said that he wanted, the movement had spread very quickly under his guidance. And then at one point around 1975, he said, now we have, let's not focus on opening more temples and bringing in more devotees, let's just try to further enhance the cultural experience of the devotees we have. Boil the milk, he said. So this was an example of the relationship, that having once obtained bhakti and established oneself in bhakti, then one can progress further through the details of Vedic practice. So that's what Vedic means from my understanding, the finer points. The secondary points, though, secondary to bhakti. Like, now, recently somebody was saying, well, we should really boil the milk again. And I said, well, where's the milk? There's some milk to boil. And one of the reasons that we're short on milk is because we've really emphasized a lot of the Vedic practices. So somebody comes into Krishna consciousness, then immediately there's a lot of cultural things that they're meant to, or they feel obliged to participate in. And over the last 15 years, we've tried to turn back the clock to the early days in ISKCON, in our Gainesville Center, to just try to make it more like Srila Prabhupada's early days in Haight Ashbury and 26 Second Avenue. Not put a bunch of cultural barriers on people, just add the chanting, that's all. So that's my understanding, and perhaps others would like to comment, but we're running short of time. Ron Govind Prabhu and Steve.
It seems like, you know, the Vedic culture, it's like you're saying, and there's truth to it, like there's 800 million Hindus and 800 million versions of Hinduism. I mean, it's not like this. I mean, American culture is like one specific essential thing. So what to speak of Vedic culture, it's just this, it had some value and identified with this Vedic literature tradition. And there's all kinds of things going on here. It's a lot of human beings doing a lot of things. But like you said, you mentioned, you know, it's like this tradition has this space, you know, for bhakti. You know, it's very supportive of bhakti. But if you're not supporting the bhakti, what's the point? You know, but it's support for bhakti in ways that maybe Calvinism may not have quite as many tools to support. So it's a very supportive cultural tradition.
Very supportive cultural tradition, right. But it's something like if you have a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old saying you want to teach them math, they can understand arithmetic. But if you come in and say, now I want to teach you calculus, well, they don't really have a foundation or a use for it, right? So it's a waste of time. So the Advaita culture can be added as we progress. I'm going to give Ron Govind Prabhu last shot here, and then we'll close up.
I was just, your presentation was so good. Few key points I got that even selfish interest that you said about Arjuna's own liberation or escaping from his fighting, it's also sense gratification. That's very nicely, clearly mentioned. Very nice. I was thinking that when Prabhupada told Tamal Krishna Maharaj about the Bhakti Shastri to have this study group, there's a famous verse on top from Chaitanya Chaitamita. It says, Bhagavan sambandha bhakti abhideya haya prema prayojan veda tina vustukaya. He said, Veda means these three things has to be given. Otherwise, it is not considered Veda. There has to be relationship with Bhagavan. The love for God is the ultimate goal and process to obtain the love of God. If any scripture don't talk about these three things, that's not considered bad, according to Lord Chaitanya.
Very nice. That answers Lakshmi's question. Very beautiful. Thank you. So, love for God, knowing how to act in that relationship, and what was the third?
The process.
The process. Is that sambandha abhideya prayog? All right. Very good. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna, Prabhupada Ki Jai, Shri Radha Shyama Sundara.